wondering if you happen to have seen the opposing party in the building or in the hallway or anywhere?
I have never seen him, Your Honor. I didn't do the trial.
Okay.
So I don't know what he looks like. He hasn't participated in the appeal process at all, so yeah. I don't expect him to be here.
Okay, understood. We're just, no, we're not, I was going to say we're a couple minutes early, but we're not, we're a few minutes late. So I will call the third case now. The third case on today's calendar is case number A22-1395, Todd Brian Kerber versus Anna Renee McKinnon. The court previously issued a case management order in this case, noting that respondent has not filed brief, but noting that the case would proceed to oral argument, and pursuant to Rule 142.03, the case will be determined on the merits. So the procedure today is that we will hear oral arguments from appellant's counsel for 15 minutes with questions as usual, and at that point, then the argument will be concluded and the panel will be adjourned without hearing any oral argument from respondent, except, of course, noting pursuant to the rule that the panel will decide the case on the merits. So counsel for appellant, you may approach the lectern. Please introduce yourself and your client, and then you may begin your argument.
I may please the court. My name is Stephen Rose. I'm the attorney for appellant Anna Renee McKinnon. We are here today asking for a reversal of the issuance of the harassment restraining order issued by the lower court in this matter. In order for the district court to have entered a harassment restraining order pursuant to Minnesota Statute 609-748, three things must occur. First, the petition must be properly filed. That's not an issue here. Second, the petition has to properly be served. Again, not an issue here. Third, the district court must find at the hearing that there are reasonable grounds to believe the accused, in this case the appellant, engaged in harassing conduct. That is the issue here, Your Honors. That element of the requirement to issue a harassment restraining order is indeed missing from the record. The district court on page...
I stop you right there, Mr. Sure. Rose. So I'm looking at the first page of the order, paragraph 2, and it's the first checked box is next to the paragraph that says there are reasonable grounds to believe that respondent has engaged in harassment, dot, dot, dot. So that sounds like exactly what you just said.
Sure, Your Honor. I appreciate that, Your Honor.
Why is that an error of law?
This is a form order. In the record, the court used 22 words saying, in the file ending 3549, Todd Kerber versus Anna McKinnon, I do find there are grounds to issue a harassment restraining order. While the order that is preprinted for the hearing does contain the legal verbiage that the case law says must be used and checked, he also fails to explain the grounds that he's relying on to make that finding. He goes on to check boxes physically or sexually assaulted the petitioner, in this case that would be the respondent, as follows. It is blank. There is no description as to what a physical or sexual assault took place within the record. The record is devoid of any sexual assault. There is no allegation of a sexual assault. The record is also devoid of any physical assault from appellant upon respondent. Myself and this panel, are left to speculate and guess as to what assault this court is talking about. Therefore, there isn't reasonable grounds within the record to support such a finding.
Do you have any case law to support your argument that the district court must fill out the as follow? I mean, because we certainly have cases where district courts have used the form order before. Do you have case law that supports that the district court needs to fill out the as follows language in order for there to be an adequate finding?
I think the district court can do. I don't have any case law saying that on point, but I do believe the district court in this matter knows that this isn't a complete form that you check boxes. If you look the next couple of pages where he describes the length of the order and describes the restriction on her liberty, he fills it in by handwriting. Now, I think the district court had an option. He could either do it in the order through handwritten additions, or he had the ability to say it on the record verbally. He did neither. And going back again, looking at the transcript, this finding of an assault makes zero sense. And this court says that if the findings of fact are not supported by the record or by logic, that it would be reversed. So, I mean, that's glaring issue number one. We have no evidence of an assault, physical or sexual. The next box that the court checked was made threats as a grounds to believe that there was some type of harassment that took place. Again, the record's devoid of any threats from the appellant to the respondent. The only threat in this case, potential threat, if you look at the record, is a threat that appellant's father made about the respondent, that the appellant happened to inform the respondent about. But the case law says that in that case, the harasser is the speaker, not the messenger. In this case, the messenger was appellant. There was no threat from appellant to respondent. Again, a finding of fact that is not supported by the record or logic, which should be reversed. The next box that the court checked as a reason for grounds of harassment is use of social media. Again, no explanation as to what use of social media they're talking about. The record in this case identifies that the appellant did go on to the respondent's social media and did things with his social media. But in order for that to be harassing conduct, it has to be unwanted. The record demonstrates that it happened during their relationship, with his permission and in his presence. So I don't understand how the court...
Well, certain things can certainly happen in when people are still in a relationship that is harassing conduct. I mean, that's not your issue. Your issue is that you would have us look at the testimony as he agreed to have these things happen. Or is your argument the temporal requirement, they were still in a relationship, so this wasn't harassing conduct?
No, the temporal portion of it is context.
Okay.
He agreed to it, he allowed for it to happen, and the purpose why he wanted to have it happen is because they were going through some stuff, as he testified. He wanted to revive or save whatever status they were in at that time, and therefore allowed this conduct to happen. It was wanted conduct. It wasn't harassing conduct. The court has to look at it from both sides of the coin. You have to look at it from the intent of the actor, and you have to look at it the reasonable conclusion of the potential victim here.
And unclear from the record about, I mean, there's a series of actions or steps, perhaps. I mean, and it seems like some of them, for example, she may have put a tracking app on the phone during the relationship, arguably with his permission. She talked to Katrina while they were in bed together. But there's other things that she admitted to doing, contacting Angie on Facebook, contacting Melissa's boyfriend on Facebook. I don't know when that occurred, and I don't know whether those actions of contacting, in other words, she might, I mean, I don't have a grip on all of the technology, but it seems like there were certain steps taken at an earlier stage that allowed her to, arguably, or according to his testimony, allowed her to have access to his social media accounts, and that it sounds like the record might support a finding that she then took steps at a later time after they had separated that were the unwanted acts. Can you clarify all of that for me, please?
Wish I could, Your Honor, but we're stuck with what the transcript says. What I've been able to glean, and I don't have a very good stranglehold on the technology either. From what I understand and gleaning from the transcript, the way it reads, is that at some time in April or May of 2022, they were going through an issue. She was on his social media in his presence. Asking about trying to gather information as to whether or not he was still faithful to her in the relationship or not. Afterwards, the records are not clear as to what took place. He's speculating as to what he thinks the tracking app is telling him. Again, the problem with that issue, Your Honor, is that if the logic is going to be that she has to remove the stuff from his phone, which apparently he doesn't know how to do either, she isn't going to be in a state of perpetual harassment because she doesn't have access to the phone. She can't come in and change the phone. It's his phone. He has to figure out how to take it off. It was put on with his permission. And she denies accessing the app after the relationship. So
where does she say that? I mean, she does, because I'm looking. He's cross-examining her at page 17. Did you contact a friend of mine? Did you contact Melissa's boyfriend, Angie, on Facebook? She says, yes, yes. But does she? Is there other testimony of hers that puts that in a different context? Or in a context that's favorable for you and your client?
I believe so, Your Honor. If I could give me a moment. Ms. McKinnon, you've heard testimony. This is on page 15, Your Honor, starting at line 14. Ms. McKinnon, you've heard testimony about this tracking app. Answer, yes. Have you accessed it since you broke up with Mr. Kerber? I have not accessed it or opened it since the end of May, sir. Have you deleted any contacts since you broke up? I have not. Deleted any apps? No. Any pictures? No. So she flat out denies after the relationship ends ever accessing the app. His is all speculative conjecture with respect to that. Now, that
didn't the district court have the ability to assess those two alternate testimonies and make a determination as to which one it found more credible?
Absolutely. That's the job of the district court is to judge credibility of the witnesses. I agree with that. But we can glean some information as to what the district court did with that, because in the order, monitoring or following the respondent, which would be the petition, or following or monitoring the petitioner is a box you can check in the order, which would be the respondent in this case, and he didn't check that. Logic would dictate that if he's going to overlap on that issue, both boxes would be checked. So this court can determine that the district court did not rely on the apps.
Could we conclude that the boxes, the checking of the boxes, were clearly erroneous? That, you know, as you argued, there was no evidence of an assault, there was no evidence of threats, you know, maybe there wasn't evidence of social media being used to harass petitioner, and notwithstanding the finding or our determination that those were clearly erroneous findings, could we still affirm nonetheless based on the record that we have, if that record supports harassment?
No, because the district court has to make those findings at the hearing. And this is...
So what you're saying is that we wouldn't have any... We would be making findings ourselves,
yes.
Essentially.
Yes, you would be taking on a fact venture, gathering venture, which you're not allowed to do. And then the problem with this case is it's compounded by the fact that the federal law is implicated because of her rights to possess firearms. And, you know, he cites the statute that prohibits the possession if you've been found to be a harassing person and have an order against her. On that issue. And the only way that federal statute comes into play is if you're deemed an intimate partner of the person who's been harassed. And an intimate partner is a spouse or former spouse, if you share a child with that person, or you cohabitate with each other. And there is zero findings on any of those issues in this case. So not only has her liberty been restricted by where she can go and when she can go, who she can talk to and who she can't talk to, she also has an implication on her Second Amendment right to bear arms. And there's no finding that supports that restriction. So reversal...
That issue was not an issue that the district court was required to determine, was it?
But it's in his order.
The order says a violation of this HRO may be treated as a misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, or felony, and then it refers to federal law. But I guess that's more of a consequence for the future. It's not there's no findings required by the district court in this case to other than the issuance of the HRO.
Well, he ordered the order be served on the Anoka County Sheriff's Department and for them to enforce it. And I know this isn't in the record, but they showed up at her house and took her guns. So, I mean, it's a real-life implication and result that's happened unwarranted because the findings to issue the order have not been properly made. The findings to restrict the right to bear arms have not been properly made. And, you know, reversal is warranted because the elements required by the statute to issue the order have not been met. Now, because the legal principles in play here identify that reversal is warranted, as we all know, remand is a remedy that can be used. But I would encourage you not to remand it and simply reverse on a practical matter. And a practical matter speaking is that this order was set to expire in August of this year. If this court takes 90 days to resolve this appeal, we're talking about 1 month before it would expire. By reversing it, the district court gets what the district court wants, keeping these parties apart for approximately 1 year, and she has all her rights restored. So the legal principles favor it, and public policy practicality also warrants a reversal.
It appears there are no further questions. Your time has expired. I think you have summed up. Am I correct?
I have, Your Honor. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your argument, Mr. Rose. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion within 90 days. That is the final case on today's oral argument agenda, and so the court is now adjourned.